We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildenbrand. Joining me, as always.
Whoa.
Over there. In wintry Chicago, Illinois. Dan Rubenstein, how are you? I don't know why I did that. I apologize.
Yeah, your voice is all over the place right now. I'm thrilled to be here with you, and I'll just speak for me. I'm not afraid of anything in this world. There's nothing you, Ty, can throw at me that I haven't already heard. I'm just trying to find a decent melody, a song that I can sing in my own company.
I'm drawing a blank. I have no idea what that is.
You've got to get yourself to.
Oh, you two stuck in a moment, right? Stuck in a moment.
And now you can't get out of it is how that lyric kept going, because you two hit a wall around 2000, 2001, somewhere in there. Beautiful Day was fine. But I am very excited for this show. If you can make it through it physically, because I know you're still on the mend, but you're dedicating yourself to the cause, because I gave you a very specific theme. I gave listeners and people who follow us on Twitter a very specific theme about teams stuck in their own moment, however long it's been, and they can't get out of it. And I sent you a link to the La Brea Tar Pits, which I'm positive you've never heard of.
I'm glad you pronounced La Brea, because I was not sure how to pronounce that second word.
Really?
That's
a major street in Los Angeles. It's dumb for me to expect anything from anybody, but I feel as if La Brea is a pretty well-known. La Brea Bakery is a big national thing.
Nope, still drawing a blank. But I'm glad that you said the word first before I went all Globe tomato on it.
I believe Lauren Conrad, Heidi Montag lived at the Park La Brea Apartments.
Okay.
If you were really going to search your memory banks.
Okay. Well,
that's all.
Welcome back. Welcome one. Welcome all. We're going
to
get into
the hills.
Yeah, we're going to get into the La Brea Tar Pits and its connection to this year college football podcast in this specific episode. I am Ty. He is Dan. We are the Solid Verbal. We are broadcasting/podcasting year round. Go to our website, solidverbal.com, for all the intel on how you can subscribe. We're also out there on social media, on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, on YouTube at youtube.com/the. Solid Verbal. Also doing some stuff on Twitch. Did you play the games yet? Are you going to be doing anything
soon? No, I'm stupid and I haven't done it yet. No, I have. Tell me which, if people want to suggest to, I don't know, Instagram, Twitter, solidverbal@gmail.com, which SNES games people want me to stream, I'll just do it. I'll just go on Twitch and stream myself playing SNES games poorly.
I did notice on there that there are like 2 million people who frequent the Mario Kart for Nintendo Switch. So may I play some Mario Kart? I do have
but
that.
But you have to hook up your Switch or N64. You have to do something.
Yeah, I could hook the, up the Switch pretty easily.
Oh,
that's
good.
Not a problem.
Good. Do it.
So maybe I'll
do they
do
all
that.
Call it Mario? Or what's the Mario Mario breakdown?
I know apparently most normal people refer to him Mario. As a different moniker, but he's always Mario to me. And I still got some NCAA 14 that I need to play. I have to finish out our season. But alas, you can go to the Twitch as well, twitch.tv/solidverbal. We're doing some stuff out there as well. Verballers.com is a Patreon. Just because the season's over does not mean we don't have bonus content planned on the Patreon. Still have folks sign it up for it. And we do have a Winter Wonders winner, which we will announce on our Thursday show. So stay tuned for that. We'll talk a little bit more in detail. But we have a show before us tonight where you have found a tie into the La Brea Tar Pits, Dan.
I have. Well, first of all, do you want any news? Is there any? I don't want to stress your voice out.
I'm not going to yell it, but. Breaking news. It's the breaking news sound. Somebody asked us, is that from Always Sunny in Philadelphia? I'll say if it is, it's not intentional because that's an old sound from Apple GarageBand that I just pulled and decided it would be fun to use here.
I think Always Sunny specifically also utilizes a number of either free or copyright loose sounds and songs. They're from like generic sound libraries. That's a lot of not copyrighted music, not expensive music. I mean, Tennessee still doesn't have a coach, but it looks like the steam might be behind Tony Elliott, offensive coordinator at Clemson, basically a Clemson lifer, played there and certainly has been a coach there for, a decade about. So we'll see on Tennessee, but they did hire an AD in Danny White, who seems well-regarded, has made some good both football and basketball hires going back to his time at Buffalo, but they pulled him away from UCF. So guys like Lance Leipold, Tony Elliott, certainly PJ Fleck now is a name that has come up a bit.
Okay.
Bill O'Brien had, the new offensive coordinator at Alabama, but certainly with his own head coaching experience, both in the NFL and in college, two different levels of success. But there are some bigger names now associated. Jamie Chadwell from Coastal Carolina with his background. So something to pay attention to, and it seems like, and this will eventually transition us to the meat of today's episode, it seems like the organizational structure and personalities have matured a bit at Tennessee.
Okay. What is that
hire of Danny
White? What does that mean?
That means that it's been a pretty chaotic administration, and if you listen to fans and writers making allusions, guys like Jimmy Haslam have wielded a ton of power, a major booster. He owns the Browns?
Yes.
Is that who he owns? And just it's been chaotic in terms of a power struggle and, hiring Philip Fulmer, who had a little bit of athletic department type experience going in, but it seemed like he's a Tennessee guy. He understands this place and made a pretty bad hire in Jeremy Pruitt. It's looking like more and more if some of the allegations behind the scenes are true. So that doesn't reflect poorly on how that program and how the athletic department has been running. I mean, I think the basketball team has been pretty good, but I don't pretend to know too much about the details of Tennessee basketball. But all the same, it seems like when schools get away from hiring alumni because they're alumni and because they get it in insert school here, that's when you see some growth. When you hire people with a lot of important, successful experience at important jobs that demand it. So I'm hopeful for that for Tennessee because it's been a while since they've had that sort of leadership, it seems, from the outside. I don't know if you have any Tennessee thoughts about who they should hire or any specifics about it, but that's where they stand now.
No, I saw some of my Penn State friends were tracking a private jet from, I believe, State College to Knoxville. So,
okay, interesting.
Given James
Franklin.
Back
to the state for James Franklin.
Yeah, given his ties to the state of Tennessee, maybe that's, I don't know. You know, this is when rumors run crazy. I have not heard anything to that point, but who knows? It is a little bit late in the cycle here. That's when strange things do happen. So, look, I hope they get their guy. We've been wanting Tennessee to kind of come into its own now for probably as far back as I can remember. at this point. It's been a while since I felt like Tennessee was a true contender. And it's a great school. It's a great stadium. It's always more interesting when Tennessee is interesting. So we wish them well.
I don't even know if that's true. I hope for just there's a lot of enthusiasm to say to be kind with a word around Tennessee football. And so I hope Tennessee can become successful. I don't remember the last time I thought, man, college football is certainly better right now because Tennessee is awesome.
Fair point.
A long time.
No, it's been a long time, but fair point. I just think that so long the narrative has been about the SEC West being the true titan of the SEC. And now we see Georgia rising up. We see Florida rising up. It'd be nice to have some other schools on the eastern side.
Florida's risen
things.
Up at least three times since Tennessee has. I mean,
I'm trying to prove a point here, Dan.
I mean, you just sort of have to bring your own citrus bowl to the party if you're talking about Tennessee.
You get my point, though.
I understand.
I want to see the East rise up.
Okay.
In some respect.
We could go a lot of weird places with that statement. Larry Scott, by the way, that's a big deal.
Talk
is that where
about
you're gonna go?
Burying the damn lead, man.
Yeah, continue. Sorry. Oh, man. Well, didn't they announce this on Inauguration Day?
I think they did.
They did, yeah.
The all-time timing for a good old news dump. But look, Larry Scott was the embattled leader of the Pac-12, CEO group? Is that what it's called? Whatever he was in charge of, the Pac-12 as a whole. We have probably done over the course of his tenure at least half a dozen shows talking about what's wrong with the Pac-12 and what Larry Scott in particular had done wrong in his tenure atop the Pac-12. Right. So it's not a total surprise that they would decide that they want to go a different direction. But it did catch a lot of folks off guard. And now this opens up the door for some new leadership, some new ideas to hopefully bring this conference into a spot where it gets more national prominence. It gets more fill in the blank, Dan. What does the Pac-12 need more of and who can help them get more of it?
Fans. The Pac-12 needs more alumni of its schools to be rabid fans, both in seats at the stadium and watching on TV and donating money. I don't know if that's a realistic thing. Larry Scott certainly can't control that.
That was going to be my question. Is that a realistic thing out West?
No, the best case scenario for the Pac-12 is something that the commissioner alongside employees around him and whoever is involved in negotiating a TV deal puts the conference in the best possible PR and broadcast position so that if Oregon, USC, Washington, I suppose ASU, and that's probably it in terms of programs that have the ability to rise up and do fun, interesting things that people in Chicago, Nashville, Birmingham, Miami, Charlotte, Philadelphia are going to care about watching no matter the time zone, then they can succeed. They can absolutely succeed. But it's a matter of making smart decisions financially on a competitive level for the conference that if and when those programs do something fun, because we've seen those programs to whatever extent do fun, interesting things or successful things, but the conference places their games at 11 p.m. Eastern for a big game kickoff or puts USC in a position where they're playing on a Friday night after a Saturday road game and don't make the playoff essentially because of it with Sam Darnold. I think that was 2017, I want to say, when they ended up playing Penn State in the Rose Bowl. Little things like that, getting things right from a PR perspective, because they're never going to generate thousands and thousands of Arizona donors and thousands of thousands of Colorado donors and people in all of those cities I named wanting to watch Cal football. It's fine. They have to be realistic about where they stand right now and just hope to put those teams that will pop up and do fun, interesting things in the best possible position for people to care about them. Financially, Larry Scott putting the conference, the TV deal with the Pac-12 network, putting the conference in San Francisco, I think they're paying like $8 million in annual rent or something wild. That needs to be improved. That needs to be altered. And that is definitely on that specific vision. So, I mean, you don't see mid-level sandwich companies basing themselves in super, is Quiznos based in the middle of Manhattan? Somehow I don't think so. So I think there just needs to be a reevaluation of strategy, and they're going to need to do something TV-wise and scheduling-wise, but there's a ceiling right now and for the foreseeable future with the Pac-12, just because it's not, by and large, when you compare it to the Midwest and the SEC, and I talked about this with Andy Staples on his podcast last night, it's not, by and large, a place where culturally it matches up with the Midwest and South.
No.
And so you have to do the best point with what you have.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a challenge, right? That's
sure.
a challenge. The time zone thing has long been mm-hmm. a huge problem. And there's no easy way to solve that. There just isn't an easy way to solve it in a way that works for both the East and the West Coast. So
yeah, it worked for Shanghai with their streaming of the Pac-12, but otherwise.
Oh, man. Well, more to come on this one. I thought you were going to go there
yeah.
first. I'm a little disappointed you didn't, but Tennessee still needs a coach. And
yeah,
Larry Scott's no longer atop the Pac-12. All right. SolidVerbal@gmail.com, as always, is the email. Write in. Let us know your thoughts on this and any and all college football matters. We continue to get a number of questions, comments, and people.
I like Sarksaf, by the way, what he's putting together at Texas.
Not
Pete
bad,
Kwiatkowski.
Right?
Yeah,
not
the
bad.
Washington D coordinator as his new defensive coordinator, brought some Alabama assistants. Jeff Choate, the Montana State head coach, is his new linebackers.
I like that move.
Special teams. Yeah. I mean, it seems like an impressive group of people that Sark is putting in position to win, hoping for the best for them, too.
We have, and by we, I mean mostly you telling me, we've recently gone on a little bit of a binge watch of Steve Sarkisian at coaching clinics on YouTube.
That's a good watch. I liked it.
It's not a bad watch.
Did you watch it?
I did.
Yeah.
The guy knows what he's doing. That's why he's the coach of Texas. Why he's coached offense at a number of places now. But good watch. I learned something, Dan.
Yeah, it was from a clinic, I think, a couple of years ago or a year ago. And yeah, I believe it was a year ago. And man, it's been a long year. Yeah, it's on YouTube. If you look up some sort of Sark coaching clinic, I don't think offensive acumen has ever been the problem with
no.
Sark. But good to see him in that position because he's, you know, he wasn't able to really talk that much at Alabama. So it's some nice insight into the Sark offense during that coaching clinic. This transitions nicely because we've talked about the Tennessee job. We've talked about USC's conference and we've talked about Texas. I asked people on Twitter, choose one of the teams below and explain why they're struggling to return to glory. USC, Tennessee, Miami, Nebraska, Texas. We got a lot of good answers. We got a lot of good answers that basically said, their fans are unrealistic. It's not 1993 anymore. And the snarky side of me, flank of me, appreciated that, but that wasn't all that helpful. So I want to talk about those five schools with you and being stuck in a moment that you can't get out of, being stuck in the La Brea tar pits, a gurgling mass of oil and tar emitting methane that got woolly mammoths and predators stuck.
Right.
And now there are all sorts of fossils in the middle of Los Angeles. I want to talk about those five schools specifically and the broader lessons that can or can't be learned from their last, I don't know, 10 years, 30 years. It depends on the school.
First off, can we talk about the La Brea tar pits a little bit more? Because I didn't know this was a real thing.
Yeah.
It definitely has the feel of like the Sarlacc in Star Wars or whatever it was mm-hmm. called, the pit.
I've been on many a field trip, by the way, in my day.
Is this like a thing where you're from? Is it close to you?
Yeah. Yeah, it's in the middle of Hollywood, West Hollywood. It's probably, I don't know, 45 minutes, something like that. Not terrible.
Is it enjoyable? Does it stink because of the methane? Like, what's that experience like?
Doesn't crack my top 25 of best places I've smelled.
Okay, right.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. I mean, you get to see a bunch of fossils and there's some history there. And it was generally paired with something else in the area field trip wise. Like you'd get a really good lunch out of it somewhere
right.
down there, something like that. But yeah, it was among the things you can go on a field trip to see. There's all sorts of museums and science centers in LA that we'd go on field trips to. But yeah, La Brea Tar Pits was for sure in the rotation.
We need to do an entire separate episode about field trips from back in the day.
I would love to. We have a bunch of off-topic shows coming up in the off-season for our Patreon, Verballers.
I think field trips would be a great discussion point, but alas, we're talking about teams that just wandered into the La Brea Tar Pits or whatever is closest to them. Why don't we start with USC since
USC's not far from there.
Yeah, not all that far from there. What kind of responses did we get to this?
It was a lot of administration stuff. It was a lot of hiring Pat Hayden, Mike Garrett, bringing in Sark and Lane Kiffin to get the band back together. Certainly what the NCAA did to USC and didn't retract from USC when it became clear that, in retrospect, their case was pretty awful considering the punishments levied at the Trojans. That hasn't really looked all that rosy looking back on the NCAA. So, you know, dealing with the scholarship issues that they've had to deal with, but then it's making mistakes, and it certainly seems like Clay Helton is not going to hit the expected ceiling, but then on a bigger level, on a higher level, what is the commitment like at the top for USC from the, you know, whatever it is, president, chancellor, regents, whatever, like, is there an actual commitment to bringing USC to a national platform, or is it just hoping it happens despite not devoting resources? And by resources, I mean support staff, facilities. And they've upgraded facilities and stuff like that recently. But still, there is a sort of backslappy way to how things work at Heritage Hall that I don't think has been fully fumigated out of that program. And so now they're just sticking with Clay Helton because he has a huge buyout and is stable at head coach after the Sark and Lane Kiffin eras. And it seems like right now they've just set a ceiling for themselves, because of these programs, their path back to at least consistent New Year's Six games, if not the playoff, seems the cleanest, hypothetically, to me. Now, Texas is in a better place right now than USC to me, but in terms of pathway, especially with the quarterback they're bringing back, USC should get there quicker. But USC also, I mean, you look at the different elements that helped Pete Carroll get USC to the national stage, and it's luck. It's health luck. It's hiring Pete Carroll luck. It's that the Pac-10 wasn't necessarily consistent at the top during their stretch run, between Washington being very, very down, Oregon being sort of inconsistent after the Joey Harrington years. You know, it's Dirk Cutter. There's not a lot of killers in the Pac-10 at this time, like 2002 to 2008, essentially. So a lot, and that's true of a lot of teams looking back at their glory days. But for USC specifically, it doesn't seem like it'll take a lot to unmuck themselves beyond starting over, hiring super qualified people at the top, which it seems like they've done at athletic director with Mike Bone. We'll see what happens when he makes a football hire.
Love the name.
Excellent name. But I think it's rather a question of self-scouting, self-awareness, and identity. Like, does USC want to put into its program what Ohio State does, what Oklahoma does, what Alabama does, what Florida does, what Michigan does, schools like that? And even Michigan's been down, but the commitment doesn't seem like it's fully there. Whereas with some of these other schools, like, the commitment's there with Tennessee, it's there with Texas. So I don't know. It's USC wanting to be something without working to get there fully. That's what it seems
to
me.
It does have a feel of that. I saw we got one response here from a gentleman talking about talent in Southern California. And I want to unpack this a little bit because it's another one of those topics.
What's his name? I think I saw this tweet and it was maybe one of the stupidest things I've seen, but continue.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to call the guy out because he was just responding to our stuff, but his point was, there's not much talent in California. Everyone wants to believe California is a great high school football state because of its population, but really it's worse than Florida, Texas, Georgia, LA. Okay, so this is...
Did you see my response to him?
I did not see your response to it, but it seems like... I did not see it, but my initial response is that that's way off base.
Okay, the current number of active NFL players by state is as follows.
Yeah.
Florida, 289. California, 257. Texas, 239. Georgia, 158. Ohio, 98. So if my math is correct, it's almost three times higher than number five.
It feels feels like this is a little bit off base, okay?
Enough to put together a decent roster at USC.
I am not subscribing to that logic, but
okay.
I am firmly in the camp of, for whatever reason, USC has had a hard time getting the most out of that talent.
Sure.
And when it shows up on campus, a lot of the guys are highly regarded. They obviously had banner careers as high school athletes, but it just seems like for whatever reason, over the last better part of a decade now, USC has had a hard time getting those guys to their absolute ceiling.
Yes and no. They've put together some really impressive seasons. I went back, like, the 2014 season was Cody Kessler going like 37 touchdowns, 5 picks. I think they went 9-3, but they had that dud against Boston College. I look back, Tyler Murphy, by the way, won that game at quarterback for BC. 5 of 14.
Yeah.
For like 91 yards. He right. ran for a ton. But it's just, there's that letdown. And so it's our old favorite Seinfeld moment. It's not about the taking the reservation. It's about the keeping of the reservation. It's sure. not always just about the acquisition of talent. It's about the development and making that talent care every week. And so that has been the issue, along with the actual numbers of talent. If you're only suiting up 65 scholarship guys because of terrible, you know, 2012, 2013, whatever, what have you, it's a bigger challenge. But yes, you are right. It's the coaching staff thing. It's the dedication to growing a program thing. It's not just the acquisition of 4-star guys, 5-star guys, but guys that fit in your locker room, guys that will contribute to a winning culture, that kind of thing. And when you're a school like USC and you have your proverbial pick of talent in Southern California, maybe it's also good to go into Nevada. Maybe it's also good right. to go into Arizona. Maybe it's good to go into Texas and get the Texas Tesla like Ronald Jones. Like, you don't necessarily say, we can just build a team based on people within 50 miles of the school. It's, how do we build a team that adheres to this specific vision? We need players that meet this specific criteria. And that's where I think USC has fallen off, or had fallen off, on their way to inconsistent results.
You know where you don't go, though? If you're USC, you Where's don't that? Go in the La Brea tar pits, Dan.
You don't go in the La Brea. Should we get like a gurgling tar bubbly sound to put
I'll have
in?
To, I'll add it in post, okay?
Okay, add it in post. Thank you.
It is literally natural asphalt.
Yeah, it is natural. It's a natural asphalt reserve. And I think the broader point with USC is what? The broader point is expectations are tricky and you can't just, as a fan base or as a school, expect certain things because of advantages if you're not following through in March, April, May, June on what it takes to reach whatever the high ceiling of college football is right now. That's where USC, that's what I think ails USC. That's the lesson there, because you're right. You look, I mean, that 2014 team specifically is a great example. I think they went 9-3 before their bowl game. You're talking Juju Smith on one side, Nelson Aguilar on the other, Antoine Woods and Leonard Williams up front on defense.
Right, right,
legit
right.
NFL players, like longer NFL careers, successful NFL careers across this roster. And just, I know this is when things went sort of haywire for Sark, but man, it just seems like the story of USC. So much potential every year and just, what are they doing behind the scenes to fortify depth and making sure they're recruiting the right guys, hiring the right guys? Because I think they hired Sark over Chris Peterson. That's a nice little what if. I don't know. It's sort of the getting rid of the fumigating the hubris thing, I think, is where USC has struggled.
Can you want to take a guess at the oldest material that was recovered from the La Brea tar pits?
Like by year or the actual substance?
Per radiometric dating of preserved wooden bones.
Preserved wooden bones. Over a million years old?
No, 38,000. Millions old.
38,000. Okay.
One That's pretty good. Million. Where are we going One, next? What,
I
what
just threw out
next?
A number. Let's talk about Texas, the school that's
Tejas.
Most closely associated. Let's move from west to east. Or I
Tejas.
Guess is Texas. I'm now looking at a map. Nebraska versus Texas as compared to USC. Well, let's just do Texas anyway.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Let's do Texas. Okay, Texas. So I feel like this has changed over the course of time. What was the rub on Mac Brown when he left? The rub was sort of that, what, the game had passed him by a little bit, that he wasn't turning talent into its optimal version, right? That, of course, there was the famous story of recruiting Johnny Manziel to play a safety. So there were a couple things going on at the end of Mac's tenure when they eventually
Texas
ran him out of town.
Slightly, to my eyes, slightly more west than Lincoln. Although it's pretty close. Continue.
So Texas, to me, outside of the whole Mac thing, which went south, he had a great run, won a title, of course. They have been in limbo ever since. And it feels like Texas, maybe even more so than USC, has been just a dearth of leadership. Like, who has that unifying vision that the entire fan base is going to get behind and can take the next step with that program? I just don't. Right. I mean, it's easy now after the fact, after a couple coaches that have gone the way of the dodo. Like, it feels easy to say it now. I'm trying to think how I felt in the moment about some of these hires that they brought in. It just feels like all of them went south really quick.
Sure.
You know, I remember the Charlie Strong hire, and that was going to be a transformational move. And it just seems like that came off the swivel very quickly. Tom Herman, another example of that. Tom Herman was on the show. We were asking him about his aptitude in being part of the Mensa Club. Like, all these guys that were supposedly going to get the most out of that situation never did. And I don't think it's because any of them were bad coaches. I just think there's always been friction with respect to the leadership.
Counterpoint, a Charlie Strong Texas squad lost to Kansas.
Counterpoint.
Yeah.
Is that fair to say?
Yeah, but I think it goes a little bit deeper. Well, first of all, Mac Brown, if we're talking about the heights of Mac Brown and returning to the glory days, this is what Mac Brown and Texas did between 2001 and 2009 in terms of wins, including bowls. So take that with whatever size grain of salt. 11, 11, 10, 11, 13, 10, 10, 12, 13. Not a single digit win between 2000 and 2010. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
Really good.
Two national championship appearances. Of course, Colt McCoy gets hurt 2009, but the 2005 season, just incredible. So what is interesting to me, especially when you look at some of these other schools, is Texas. I think the Mac Brown thing is not that the game passed him by, that you just can't whiff on quarterbacks and you just can't get lazy recruiting. And that's the sort of thing where just because you can get essentially for whatever stretch most of the five stars in the state of Texas that you want for a stretch doesn't mean building a program without being more discerning or seeing how some players start their senior year and so forth isn't worthwhile. And so we saw a lot of Mack Brown wrapping up his recruiting classes on junior day. And I guess that's okay if it works out, but guys change. Guys' priorities change. Guys get hurt. Things change. And so it just seemed at the end Mack Brown wasn't attacking every element of running a program the size of Texas, like perhaps he once was. I think right. That's reasonable to say. And then you couple that with every egg in the Garrett Gilbert basket, right? That doesn't work out. And then it's the David Ash injury issues. He has a somewhat promising 2012. Case McCoy doesn't fully work out. And that's into, you know, you're getting into Charlie Strong and Tyrone Swoops and Gerard Hurt. Like, you can't whiff on quarterback at Texas. There are too many amazing options to choose from that it is mandatory that you at least find yourself a B-plus quarterback, which is what I think Sam Ehlinger is. But that brings me to sort of access of mediocrity. And that goes coaching staff, quarterback, whatever. But there is also that element of, I am going to tie my success to this B-plus quarterback with a pretty well-defined ceiling and hope that it doesn't come back to bite me. Spoiler, it always does.
Yeah, right.
It's Sam Ehlinger, it's Tommy Armstrong, it's Ja'Cory Harris, it's, you know, all these types where you're saying, and I'm B-plus might be generous in some of those seasons, where you're saying, I'm going to be too sentimental and I'm not going to be win at all costs and do what's actually best for the program, which is search out the best possible answer at quarterback every year and open the competition unless my quarterback is a legit star. And if my quarterback is not a legit star at Texas, competition is open. I think you have to have that mentality at places that big.
Yeah. The quarterback thing's been concerning. And I also feel like, so I point to leadership.
Tyler Bray. Sorry.
Thank you. Don't do that ever again.
Just yell that, interrupt you with Tyler Bray. Tyler Bray.
But yeah. The leadership thing is one angle. The cohesive unifying vision is obviously a symptom of that. But like, it's just never been both sides of the football or even two sides of the same side of the football working in unison. It's been a lot of disparate parts kind of going opposite directions and never felt like they've been rowing in the same direction since that nice run that they had at the end of, the aughts, right? It's just...
Yeah. And there were moments in 2018. Tom Herman had a really nice
season. They've had moments. And look, under Herman, they were good in big games. They were good in bowl games, right? But... as for getting them to kind of that next level, just hasn't happened. So,
so what's keeping them stuck throughout? We're now talking about three different coaches. What's keeping them stuck?
Well, I think what got them stuck was leadership. I think what's keeping them stuck is.
So you're talking AD? Are you talking boosters, head coach?
I think the whole
school
lot,
leadership.
Okay. I think the whole lot. Yeah. I think the whole lot. I think it's they've not been able to put together a formula where the coach does this, the AD does that, boosters have their role here. Like it just feels like a big old mishmash. And
sure.
It's hard at a school like Texas, right? That's really tough. So I think that's keeping them stuck. Hopefully they can kind of navigate their way out of that now. But the talent thing, to your point of you can't have a B-plus quarterback or you need to have at least a B-plus quarterback. They haven't been able to really develop talent elsewhere.
Right.
And so just that inconsistency to me. I don't know.
There's also the element of when you're talking about leadership and you're talking about voices behind the scenes, is the coach hiring a staff that he fully believes in? Or is there somebody saying, this is the guy, or don't hire this guy. We don't like this guy at defensive coordinator. You can't hire him. Like, how much is the coach empowered? And then what is the coach like in terms of force of personality to keep those voices at bay? Because that leaks into everything. That becomes a distraction. When you have all sorts of cooks in the kitchen saying, that's a little much tarragon in that stew. I don't know about that much tarragon. Why don't we take out some tarragon? Why don't we take out half of that recipe? Like when you start, and that's maybe the singular hidden Nick Saban talent. Because it almost seems like it's the exception to the rule at a lot of these enormous places to keep that train rolling as long as possible. Yeah. What Nick Saban has done, given how many voices are in that background at Alabama, that might be the singular talent. And it's his winning that obviously does it. But he has full daily control and makes correct decisions every day. Because as soon as he doesn't, that's when the voices get a little bit louder. Was Tom Herman that force of personality? Maybe at times, but not overall, it seems. Right. Doesn't seem like it was for Charlie Strong. Seems like Mack Brown had a really good stretch of being, but he got into that sort of senatorial, older, not perhaps being as hungry near the end of that. And I don't know if that's the quarterback evaluation thing. And he made changes. He found a young, hungry Manny Diaz, I think, from Mississippi State. Like, he identified some good coaches. Brian Harsin was brought in, I think, as his offensive coordinator there. And it didn't work. It didn't work because you got to find a quarterback and you can't stay that long. You can't screw up quarterback in Texas.
Yeah, well.
So that's what I think, big picture. I don't know if Sark is that force of personality.
I don't know if Sark is that either, but the staff's interesting. You know, I remember a few hires ago, there was one Division I head coach who was in the mix and wanted the job, but ultimately turned it down because he didn't have control over his staff. I don't know if that would have been a good hire, but I know at least in one instance that used to be the case. Doesn't sound like it's quite the case now with Sark. You know, he's really thinking outside the box, not necessarily going for the sexiest name, but trying to get guys in there that he thinks are going to be helpful. We'll see. We'll see if it changes. Do you want to do Nebraska now?
Sure. By the way, Mike Stoops was apparently offered a job on that Texas staff, and it was rescinded by Sark because of like internal backlash.
Yeah.
So that might be test number one. We'll see. Yeah. And that's okay. When I think Jeff Choate got the job. Let's do Nebraska. Nebraska's fascinating.
So Nebraska left the Big 12. Nebraska was in the Big 12 forever.
Mm-hmm.
And decided to go to the Big 10, which I still think's a good move financially. We've got a lot of commentary here that culturally it wasn't the best move for Nebraska, but we can debate the merits of that here in time. Look, the college football world has grown in many different directions since Nebraska was a force, right? It's just a different ball game now. And I feel like recruiting is always going to be a challenge to a place like Nebraska. You've got to have a system, like a Tom O'Brien had a system, and be very good at it.
Meant Tom Osborne, but I love that you said Tom O'Brien.
Tom O'Brien, different guy. Tom Osborne, you know who I meant.
No, let's
I offended everybody in the great state of Nebraska. I apologize.
It's okay.
Tom Osborne, right.
Yeah.
But he was very good at running his system. Folks knew what it was. It had an identity. He could recruit to it. And eventually he hit critical mass with it, where it just kind of fed into itself. It was very dominant for all those years. They've lost that identity. Right. Over the years, they've lost that identity. I don't know if that old Osborne identity would even work nowadays. Probably not. But I just kind of don't know what Nebraska is. I thought we knew what it was going to be when Scott Frost got there, that it was going to be this high flying offense that was going to be a ton of fun to watch. And I still think he's a good coach, but even he's had difficulty building out that system in the same way that we saw it down at like a UCF. It just hasn't materialized. So I think we got to start with the recruiting question of, are they able to attract the talent, even to Lincoln, Nebraska, that they could down in Orlando, Dan, despite the fact that it's like two separate planes of college football? I think that's a fair question to ask.
Scott Frost was a no-brainer hire. The sentimentality was there, which can become an issue, like we sort of talked about with USC. I agree to a certain extent. So Nebraska and success was tied to a lot of different things, right? Their strength and conditioning program was way ahead of its time. People snicker while listening and say, well, maybe a little too ahead of its time in terms of what some players, all players, whatever, put into their bodies. All conjecture and rumor, but that's a line of thinking. But certainly, yes, the strength and conditioning was well ahead. They had the walk-on program. They had all sorts of things to build up depth. It was the place, certainly. It was an extremely winnable conference at its height because, I mean, modern height, because I think Oklahoma was pretty down in the mid-90s. If you look back, Gary Gibbs and the one year of the disastrous year of Howard Schnellenberger. So there were advantageous things, just like when Texas was at its height. If you look at the Big 12 North and who they had to play year in and year out in a Big 12 championship game, it's more axis of mediocrity. So all due respect to some of those Northern teams, but still, look at the records. It wasn't amazing. A lot of people like to point out the Nebraska thing of like, oh, it's not 95 anymore. You can't just expect to be amazing. Yes and no. Nebraska was in a really nice position. Certainly recruiting changed. It got more national. The move to the Big Ten, I think, was a disaster for its recruiting because you lose the Texas footprint. If you're all of a sudden, if you're playing Texas Tech and Baylor and TCU or whatever, if there is some sort of evolved Big 12, whatever, with Nebraska still in it and adding a school like TCU, there's good reason for a high-level three-star, low-level four-star, four-star, whatever kid to go to Nebraska because you know you're going to be playing in front of friends and family. You know you're going to be playing in your home state. So there is that recruiting footprint element. And Nebraska is, I mean, it's just a small state. I think it's the 38th largest state in the country. Can you name the third largest city in Nebraska? I had to look it up.
The third largest city.
Yeah, Omaha 1, Lincoln 2. I'd be shocked if many people that are not from Nebraska could name Bellevue, Nebraska.
Is that the answer?
That's the answer, yeah.
Nah, no, sorry.
You're right. It's just, it's different. It's difficult, and I don't want this to come off as hectoring or lecturing or whatever, but Nebraska has to be very specific. And I think the specific fault of Mike Riley, who recruited pretty well, but the specific fault of Scott Frost, it comes down to, it's that sentimentality. 4 years of Tommy Armstrong? Four? Took over for Hurt Taylor Martinez? 4 years. Okay. But that is a signal. The Frank Solich thing, I know people are going to point to because he was winning a bunch of games and whatever. And he went to Ohio and he's been very good at Ohio for a long time. There were high expectations. Nebraska just couldn't see the writing on the wall years in advance that college football was evolving. And if you've got a successful coach, just hold on to him. Now, maybe there are interpersonal issues that I'm not touching on here that are part of the story. But all the same, the Nebraska thing, it's just harder to win there. But I will insist it's not impossible.
So let me ask you a question then. Let me ask you kind of a related question.
Yeah.
Scott Frost, I agree. No-brainer hire. I still believe in Scott Frost, though.
Almost hired at Florida.
Scott Frost, no-brainer hire. Take him home to Nebraska. I like the move. My confidence has waned a little bit. Not going to lie, but I still think he's the right guy for the job.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, if I were to unhire Scott Frost and in his place hire Matt Campbell, would you feel differently about the state of the program?
Yeah. I think Matt Campbell has proved it at a difficult place to win, and Scott Frost hasn't. I don't think UCF is a difficult place to win in that conference because of the nearby talent. Now, there are lots of schools, Miami Hurricanes, near a lot of talent that cannot win on an expected level. But UCF in that specific conference with that talent and, you know, having nearby Power 5 programs that guys are transferring away from and can just land at UCF, that kind of thing, it's a great place to be. And this is our old, our Iron Chef versus Chop thing.
Yep.
What can you do with weird ingredients? What can you do with the best ingredients? People aren't food, but that's my analogy.
And Nebraska is
but
just...
But I think, I'm going to insist, you can win at Nebraska, but the vision has to be very specific, the recruiting has to be very specific, and the assistant hire and culture has to be more specific on a level probably unmatched at any other Power 5 wannabe huge program.
The recruiting thing is a very interesting problem at Nebraska because you're just not by population centers. Somebody wrote in about this, and it's a fair point.
Yeah, that's true.
You're not by population centers, which means that given the fact you can't really ride on the old Tom Osborne coattails at this point, not riding on legacy in 2021, right. You have to be very deliberate about where you're spending your time and your resources to go out and bring new talent in. And now that you're removed from the Big 12, do you lose that pipeline you might have had into the state of Texas? I don't know, but it's a very, very difficult nut to crack if you're Scott Frost to go out there, to bring talent in. And, you know, I almost compare it a little bit to like a Lubbock, right? You're kind of in the middle of nowhere.
No.
Not quite.
Come on. You're still in West Texas is that can be out there, but you're still in state and playing in state schools every week.
Well, that's my point.
But a lot of the time. Yeah,
that's my point. My point is that there's a similarity there, but it's almost more difficult. So I don't know.
It's definitely more difficult.
It's a very interesting problem. I certainly hope that Scott Frost can put all the pieces together. But I think with all the schools that we've talked about here so far, USC, Texas, Nebraska is the one that's the hardest to solve for a number of different reasons. That being said, I think the Big Ten West might be the easiest side of the conference to win.
Oh, it's the easier side for sure.
So if you can get a little bit of momentum, you can build your profile up pretty quickly, but it's breaking that inertia, right? That I think is what's the hardest.
It's the tar. Yeah.
Getting out of those pits. Yeah. All right. So look.
By the way, 2009 Nebraska defense was arguably the best defense in the country. Now, we're going back now 11, 12 years. Where's Jared Crick from, Ty? I'd be shocked if you knew this because I had to Google it 11 seconds ago. He's from Albuquerque. Hmm. Where's Ndamukong Suh from? He's from Portland. They can build a program. They can recruit. It's Bo Pelini and he had that reputation. But if Scott Frost is going out and hiring or whoever is replacing Scott Frost next year, the year after, whatever, is going out and identifying assistant coaches with very specific relationships in different parts of the country, maybe the western half or the midwestern part of the country, where they have this reputation for unearthing high quality starting three-star defensive linemen, offensive linemen, and turning them into four-star, five-star type talents once they're in college. Nebraska can beat most teams in college football. But it's that very specific vision. It's hiring that coach with those relationships, with that ability to sell, with that ability to build a culture, which it seems like Scott Frost just isn't that guy because that's a tough-ass job.
Tough job. Look, I've enjoyed the fact that we've had actual conversations about these situations and that we're not just buzzing through it. So my proposal is, why don't we bump off? What schools do we have left? We have Miami. Who else?
Tennessee.
Maybe we'll throw another third school in. Maybe like Michigan or somebody.
Can't believe you're giving me the red light.
And we'll talk about that on Thursday as part two.
Okay. I like that. We have to find an international tar pit.
Sure.
Yeah.
But I want to give ourselves a chance here to, you know, expound on some of these points and get some more commentary from the Verballerhood because I'm looking through. We got a lot of great answers and the show's already running a little bit long in the tooth. So we'll have that conversation on Thursday if you're cool with that.
I'm cool with that.
All right, Dan. Where can people find us?
What, your OnlyFans, your secret OnlyFans is as follows. They can find us at solidverbal.com, follow us Instagram, Twitter, blah, blah, blah. Everybody that's listening to the show still at this point either knows where they can find us or is who's an above average quarterback? Who is the most above average quarterback currently playing in college football, Ty? That's what I'm going to compare their Googling skills to. And if you'd like to support the show, because this is what we do. Your support is extremely meaningful. Patreon is an option for you. Verballers.com to learn more.
Verballers.com.
Who's the most above average? Who is the quintessential current above average quarterback in college football?
Oh man, you're putting me on
the
spot.
Or from 2013, your choice.
Or from 2013.
Or from 2013.
Man, I need to think more about that. I don't know. Not off the top of my head.
You want to say Sean Mannion?
Sean Mannion was a pro prospect, wasn't he?
Hey, he was on some rosters. Quintessential above average quarterback. James Franklin, Mizzou as a senior. I thought he was full on good.
Oh, you're
but
talking
maybe.
About the, okay.
Casual dress.
Right.
You want to talk about Chase Reddick?
I can't even remember what I had for Connor lunch, let alone Shaw? 2013. Connor Shaw was... Connor Shaw is
not just above average.
He might be the answer, though.
Kevin Hogan
was a system guy.
Shane Carden, ECU.
Wow. You're really digging these out, aren't you?
Of course. I mean, I have a list here. I'm not going to. Nathan Shielhouse. Do we have Nathan Shielhouse level Googlers in our midst? Say yes.
What about Max Brown?
Oh, I mean, he started a game, I think, for USC. I think he was.
But then he went to Pitt.
I really like the media work he's done. But yeah. Above average college quarterback, I'm not sure. Brett Hundley.
J.W. Walsh. We had him on our show, I think, back in the day.
Yeah, I'd say he's quintessential above average. I think he led a season in efficiency rating, though. Devin Gardner.
Oh, man. Devin Gardner.
Shout out Inkster. I think that's where he's from. Okay, that's all I have.
For that guy over there, my good friend Dan Rubenstein, for myself, Ty Hildenbrandt, we will talk to you all on Thursday. In the meantime, stay safe, stay healthy, stay solid.
Can't wait for part two. Peace.